Good morning. My name is Peter. I'm a recovered alcoholic. Grateful to be alive and sober and part of a sacred place called Alcoholics Anonymous. And first things first, thank the committee for this kind invitation to me to be here with you this morning and share my experience, strength, and hope. And the tapers for doing all the hard work they've been doing. So we can give it up for all of them and say thank you. Great to see Miss Peggy last night. She actually remembered my name. I thought I was enshrined into the AA Hall of Fame. And, you know, being an alcoholic, she remembered my name. She knew I was from Jersey. She remembered Marion. And the ego went, see that? Peggy knows me. And then the alcoholic mind says, well, maybe she really don't like me. And then I'm thinking, what'd I do to her? So I'm not talking to her anymore, so forget it. Great to be here. Great to see Greg and his family and a bunch of other folks. So I always like to get to do this, to share what it was like, what happened, what it's like now as a result of the 12 steps and the big book Alcoholics Anonymous, which has taken me to experience this power, the power we call God in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I call AA, it's for me, the sacred rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I call it sacred because it is, and if you haven't experienced that yet, I hope you stick around long enough to find out the sacredness of these rooms called Alcoholics Anonymous and treat it with the way that it treats us. We're nothing less than grace and dignity when any time we walk into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Loving God separated me from alcohol June 23rd, 1988, and I'm a recovered drunk, and I say recovered because I am. And anything less than that great fact would be falsely humble. But again, this great power took me from a scrap heap to a level of life better than the best I've known. To get here with you this morning, to suit up and show up for fun and for free, with a little bit of grace, a little bit of dignity, and some integrity, which is a long way from where I left off in June of 1988. So I get to do things like this. I get to answer invitations. My life is one of invitation. My life is one of surrender. My life is one of acceptance. My life is one of throwing myself with the mercy of my God every morning, asking him for the power to keep me sober for the day, because I'm my own power. I'm drunk this morning. And so I come and I get to give for free, for fun and for free. And so when the invitations come like this one, if my calendar's open and there's no family obligations, I make arrangements to get here. Because it's a pretty neat thing to do, to shout from the rooftops about the power of God in the sacred rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, huh? And it's a pretty neat thing to tell you in a general way what it was like and tell you about the worst things I've done and the most God-awful things that have happened to me. And only in AA can we talk about the worst things that we've done, the most God-awful things that happened to us, and someone says, give me a number, I give you a call. Yeah. Only we get each other, right? But we get to share what it was like. And it's really interesting. I travel a lot doing this, and in my own little circles, my home group is a Deerfield Big Book study group on Thursday nights. And when I walk in there, walk into a local AA meeting, you know, the basements that don't smell nice and get a rotten cup of coffee is the coolest place to be. They know me, and I know them. I know a few folks here. A lot of you guys are newfound friends. But I don't have to say anything this morning other than I'm an alcoholic, and you already know where I've been. And you already know what I'm trying to do. And that's do what's right, what carry the vision of God's will into all my activities. So I get an opportunity to do this and share. And share what God has done for me. My life consists currently of working with strict spiritual disciplines in steps 10 and 11, which means I have a life of prayer and meditation. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor. My lineage goes right back to Dr. Bob. And my job is to carry that torch and not water it down, not people please, but give it away the way it was passed on to me. Because we have a responsibility whenever we get to share at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, not just behind a podium, but from a floor. Because I have new people. We have new people coming in. Or perhaps the person with double-digit sobriety who's struggling, who's hit that wall, whose ego's reemerged and can't tell anyone how poorly they're doing on the inside. On the outside, we know how to look well. So what I'm sharing better have depth and weight. I better speak their language the way you guys speak your language when you speak to me. What a responsibility God has given us. And the interesting thing about this message we get to carry, God could have gave it to anyone on this planet. He could have gave it to great minds. He could have gave it to psychiatrists and psychologists and PhDs, but he gave it to another drunk to bring the sheep back to the herd. And what we get to do in Alcoholics Anonymous is bring God's lost children back home. What we do in AA is come home. We come home to a place what the Oxfords talked about, purity, honesty, unselfishness, and love. That's why these rooms are sacred, because we get reborn and resurrected in the sacred rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what we're about. Huh? Based on my track record, and I'll lay out some here to Vegas, many of our track records, on a Sunday morning, usually popping out of our after hours right about now, or nursing a god-awful hangover, or waking up to someone that we don't even know their name, right? I mean, I can tell you how many times I got drunk. I thought she looked like Bo Derek, and I woke up to Bo Diddley. You know how I got into that jam, right? Waking up in jail, and, you know, the nights are blackout, and yet we're here having a cup of coffee, joined together, shoulder to shoulder, upon this journey. That's God's great work. And I'm so honored to be a part of this morning. My life consists of prayer in the morning, prayer in the evening, and I work with 3 a days. I pray in the afternoon. I work with prayer meditation 3 times a day. I go into sacred silence. I go in darkness to see and silence to hear and be still with my God. So I can be a useful agent, an effective agent, which our big book talks about. Being agents for God, what a huge responsibility. And I better be coming from a place of purity, honesty, unselfishness, and love. I better not be coming from me. In fact, when I do these talks, I hope I don't show up. Is this on? More coffee for the back row. I mean, I don't know what they're doing back there. But we have a responsibility, have a responsibility. Not to listen to the voice in the head, because you know how the voices in the head go. They're constantly talking to us. They're constantly creating drama, and the ego loves all of it. I don't know how many people drove to this meeting alone tonight, but if you think about the ride over here alone, if you were in your car alone, or perhaps you were in your room alone, think about how many other people you were really talking to on the way in here, right? You were talking about 45 other people. And when you get back to the car in your room, they're saying, look at you. How lame is this? AA on a Sunday morning. What's wrong with you? I can't believe you're still married to this. What's wrong? You know, and it goes on and on and on. The sense of who I am, the sense of who we be, does not come from thought. It does not come from mind. It comes from the Spirit. And my job is to experience oneness, to get integrated with this power called God, who was present all along. When I was at my worst drinking in 1988, where I was homeless, unemployed, and living in the streets, panhandling for money, my God was just as alive then as he is with me this morning. The difference was the lack of a relationship with this power called God, which we get to experience in AA. And how do we do that? We have a big book called The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is my GPS to experience God. It says, may you find him now. I don't need to go out there to find God. The great reality is deep down within, my book tells me. My entire life was spent on reaching out there to find some sort of utopia, some sort of ease and comfort. And it did in the bottom of a bottle once in a while. It did in a different bedroom. It did on a food spree, a money spree, an anger spree. It did. External conditions work temporarily, but I always woke up with the morning after headache, with the morning after remorse and guilt. And I can't believe I did it again. So I was chasing down these dark alleys to find something to get me right in here, because I was dirty, I was a mistake, I don't belong. And I tried hanging out with different type of folks. And what I find now through the 12 steps is I'm made right in here. I'm whole in here. And what I've been searching for was right in front of me my entire life. It's called God. We get to experience God in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't have to search. All I need to do is go in and remove me. The process of recovery is subtraction, never addition. It's by removal that we wake up. It's by subtraction that we experience oneness with God, and that's been my experience. What a good deal. And the instructions in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I go into prayer meditation 3 times a day. I didn't plan that. It's where my Father moved me to. We're going to pray, okay? We're going to pray. And what I have found out in this life of Alcoholics Anonymous, I have a life of service. I serve my God and I get to serve you. And for me and my house, we serve God. We serve Alcoholics Anonymous. The flip side of that, if I'm not serving God, that means you must serve me. And I become a weak and feeble God. And God lives on the outer fringes of my life and I become kingdom of my domain. And that's an awfully scary place to be. If I'm not serving God, it means you must serve me the way I think you should serve me, how I think you should serve me, and what I do is I shake hands with fear, and my life goes into instant unmanageability, and I'm back searching again. And at some point, I need a drink to make everything right. I'm an alcoholic. I drink. But because of God that I found in Alcoholics Anonymous in these 12 steps, I'm not searching like that anymore. I'm just looking to experience my God. I'm not a seeker of belief or faith anymore. I'm a seeker of experience. I knew Jack Daniel's work when I experienced it. I saw you drinking it. It looked pretty good. I saw her drinking it. She looked even better. Until I drank it, I felt really good about me. So that's what I do. I seek. I seek. I'm a seeker of experience with this power called God. And my God, our God, is one of abundance, pursuing every one of us. We're born to be saints. Pursuing every one of us. This morning, and the guy drinking under the bridge, God's pursuing, knocking on a door, saying, let me in. And it's that way now. And all I need to do is stop everything and just be still and surrender to this power, and great things happen. That's how I'm sober. June 23rd, 1988, I was living in the back of a hallway on the Lower East Side of Manhattan. It was a sordid spot. Very strange characters floating around in my life back then. I had been unemployed for a while. I was homeless for a while. I don't know the last time I ate or took a shower. I was about 30, 40 pounds less than I weigh now. Had the same clothes on for the longest time. And I still had a reservation, a lurking notion that somehow, some way, I might be able to do this. And then one day, it wasn't working anymore. I couldn't get drunk. I couldn't get sober. I hated my life. I was afraid of sobriety. I despised God. But in that surrender, certain things start to happen. I became teachable. June 23rd, 1988, the day of my last drink, I was completely out of my mind. And I hope for the rest of my life to completely be out of my mind. In fact, I hope everyone in this room never gets your mind back. It's the place where the problems begin. It's where fear gets generated. It's where resentments live. It's all of it. June 23rd, 1988, I made a surrender, perhaps the most sincere plea to this God I will ever make in my entire life. And I said, please take me from this. I don't want to die. And it was the first time in my life I heard a different voice. It was the voice of God. And very often in AA, I hear folks, you know, telling other folks, oh, God's talking to you. You better get right size. Oh, God doesn't speak to you that way. Who are you? And when did you become God? God speaks to every one of us. In the depths of my despair, a different voice came to me. It happens to us in sobriety. It's the touch of the master's hand. About to lose one of his children. He won't stand for that. He will speak to us and bring us back to the herd. Make us reach out to make a phone call. Just do something. Interrupt the death. June 23rd, 1988, I heard a different voice. Enough, I have other work for you to do, was what I got. I didn't know what this was. I was scared to death. But on that, I was able to go reach out and get in touch with my dad, who placed me in my seventh and last treatment center. I'm in the process, like many of us now, as a recovered drunk, in the process of experiencing permanent sobriety, what our book talks about. Our book doesn't say to hang in there, hold on, don't leave till the miracle happens. Someone said it last night. Peggy said it. We're sitting in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. The miracle has happened. You want to doubt God? Look in the mirror. I'm sober. The age of miracles is certainly with us. What are we going to do now? Go give it all away to another drunk walking in the door. What a great way to live, huh? My first drink came when I was about 14 years old. I grew up in Brooklyn, New York. Like, you don't know by the way I speak, right? In Brooklyn, the only requirement for membership is a pinky ring, sunglasses, and gold jewelry. Some of those guys in my first home group thought The Godfather was an educational movie, but that's a whole other... It's like, hey, you want to get sober, you know. But I remember my first drunk, and many of us remember our first drunk because it was that life-changing, that transforming. It did for me what I couldn't do for myself. Growing up in my home, it wasn't the Norman Rockwell painting. We all have our stuff. We all have our stories. We all have our abuse issues. We all have our family dying. We all got it. But if anything like me, I used it. I justified the inappropriate behavior because of the cross I was carrying. And in my home, I had a dad who was larger than life. A man's man made Tony Soprano look like Tinkerbell. This was a tough guy. And he looked you right in the eye all the time. And if you blinked when he was speaking to you, that means you were lying. I was blinking all the time. I was into sports and music and art. I liked that. I used to love hanging out with the older guys, the hippies. I really loved the movement at the time. And my dad was so far removed from that. I don't think my dad ever picked up a baseball bat to play baseball. He used it for other things. Huh? You know. And my mom was more like me. The problem was she was full-blown alcoholic growing up. I grew up with a mom who was alcoholic. And you guys know the stigma. I'm talking about the 60s. There were no such thing as women alcoholics. That's a man's disease. And it didn't get outside the house. But we made trips from sanitarium to sanitarium to sanitarium, medications, suicide attempts. I would hide the pills on my mom from my dad. I would hide the booze and lie to my dad about mom's drinking. And I watched this woman disintegrate in front of me. Now, here's a woman who took me to my religious community and always told me all things are possible with God. And I start to wonder about this power called God because mom is getting worse. I mean, she was frail when she finally committed suicide. And January 23rd, 1974, I woke up to absolute terror. And the terror was hearing my dad wailing on the phone. Never saw this man cry till this night. Wailing on the phone, a 911 call, my wife is dead. And I said, she did it. I remember laying in my lower bunk, literally frozen with fear. I couldn't move. My life changed forever. My design for living, which she was giving me, was removed. And the relationship, if there was one, with God, went south. I wanted nothing to do with this cruel jester, this God that they told me all things are possible, take my mom from me. How dare he? And I wanted nothing to do with God. My perceptions about God were so twisted and disordered, I thought men who went into a church were weak and cowardly. Church was for sick people. God was for sick people, not for a real man. And so off I went on my own. And this one spring summer night, I was hanging out in a corner. When I was growing up back in New York, you had to have a crew to belong to. And you hung out on a corner of a schoolyard. It was your rite of passage. It was a thing you did. In fact, if you were going off to like Yale University in the fall and you weren't going to hang out on a corner, we felt really bad for you. You're going to leave this, you know. And my friends were drinking Colt 45. Now, they were men. They were 16 and 17 and had life solutions. And I wanted to be like them. I watched them drink, have fun, talk to the girls, roughhouse. It seemed like a pretty good deal. I wanted what they had to offer. And as the court went around, I remember thinking, my dad's going to drive up and catch me drinking. And he warned me many times, and I didn't want that to happen. Well, the police were going to arrest me, and I didn't want that. But I'm an alcoholic, and so I put my hand in there. I was restless, ill, and discontented. I had the voices of just chatting at me. Not smart enough, not good-looking enough, not tall enough, not rough enough, not there. I couldn't talk to women. The guys were doing it, but I was just so insecure. Until I took a few pops off a quart of Colt 45 beer. It went down and nothing happened. And so I drank a little bit more, and I drank a little bit more, and something indescribably wonderful happened. Bill says it best in his story when he said, I had arrived. When Colt 45 beer started to rocket me, and I arrived to that place of utopia, euphoria, where everything got nice and warm and fuzzy, I arrived. I was not fear-based and insecure anymore. I wasn't thinking about the pain of losing my mom and the shame that came with that. I wasn't even thinking about this guy called Dad who was cunning, baffling, and powerful. There was no before, no later. Ron, I was present to the moment. My God, my friends were my best friends in the whole world. Everything was perfect. I loved the effect produced by alcohol. So give me more. And so I continued to drink. And by the end of the night, I turned into like Al Pacino. I mean, this was a great thing. I was able to talk to the girls in roughhouse with the guys, and whatever you did, I knew it, and I was part of it, and I had the alcoholic, you know, blabber going on. I was part of everything. Even if I didn't know what you're talking about, I knew what you're talking about. This is a good thing. The next morning when I woke up, there were no hangovers. There were no blackouts. My teeth were still in my mouth. I wasn't handcuffed in a jail cell. It was a great thing. And I went down to the park the next morning to play ball with the guys, the older guys. I had a story. My shoulders were this wide walking into the park. I had my passage into manhood. But underneath all of that, I know you guys will identify with this. I finally found a panacea for what was killing me. I found a panacea for my ills. I had a solution to this thing called life, because I quickly found out that I can't do life on life's terms. That's a myth. That's an illusion and delusion. I can't do life on life's terms. 25 years plus sober. I still can't do life on life's terms. I'm an alcoholic and cannot manage my own life, drunk or sober. And anytime I've tried to get in the driver's seat and say, God, I got it, I run into a wall of fear, resentment, insecurity, and doubt. I'm an alcoholic. I cannot manage my own life. I can't live life on life's terms. Here's how I live life on life's terms. I need a drink just to walk in this room. I need a drink to get my car. I need a drink. I need a drink just to breathe. Rigorous honesty is out the window. You have to be rigorously honest. I can cut corners because I'm me. And by the way, I'm Moses, so it's different for me. I can't do life on life's terms. I never tell a newcomer live life on life's terms. How do you do that? I failed. I got an F on my report card for trying to live life on life's terms. And AA was the only place that would take me because I'm broken. I'm broken from the inside. I'm weak flesh born into the slavery of skin. And there is no way out. I'm on a horse riding backwards. I'm never going to face forward. And I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's the room full of broken toys. Everyone has a brokenness. We all have that where it hurts. If I sit down with you and we have a cup of coffee together and I say, where does it hurt? We all got that swallowing heart because we got that thing or things that never gets resolved out there unless I'm drinking. I live life on life's terms. You can bring me a brand new Cadillac. That's beautiful for a while till he drives up in a Mercedes and I'm a failure again. I get the promotion. I still have someone above me. I can't do life on life's terms. Life on God's terms is simple and easy. The one who makes it difficult is me and my thinking mind. This life of illusion. And the only thing that shuts that down is a drink. It was like that when I was a kid. We have this crowd that I would play to. I think we all get this. I have to perform for you, whether I'm in a home group, around my family, around the person most closest, and perhaps a husband or wife. It's always a performance. Got to look good, got to share good, got to dress right so you think I'm okay. Because in the voice head, in my head is judging you. You don't like me, so I got to get great. So if you give me applause, I count. There's something. I have some substance. I'm not a failure. That's bondage. That's bondage, which the third step prayer says, relieve me of the bondage of self. Then what happens is we have this other voice in the head. I've had this one for years, that if I'm not listening to you, there's a voice in my head that no matter what I do, it says, but look at you. Look at you. You should be fill in the blank. You should be fill in the blank. You ought to be, and I'm never, ever right. At some point, I'm reaching back out there to make me feel right, and it's usually a drink, Mr. Boston, Blackberry Brandy, because at that point, I don't care anymore. That's bondage. We don't need to be, I don't need to be an upstanding member of Alcoholics Anonymous and experience that kind of bondage. I don't need to listen to voices in the head. The only thing I need to do is listen to that quiet voice, that God voice that sometimes comes to a person with 2 months, that comes to a person with a white chip, or perhaps someone like Peg who's here for so long with great experiences. But it comes through people like us, or comes in the silence when I'm on my knees saying, Father, please help me. It will always be delivered. That is a lot different than listening to the ego and the voice in the head, the mind, that is my predator, that wants me dead, will settle for me drunk, and is never, ever right. It's always searching and never, ever satisfied. Huh? I come into Alcoholics Anonymous broken like that, with a bunch of other broken folks who know how to get right again. With the touch of the Master's hand, they say, it's not that difficult. You've been looking out there. All you need to do is go in, Pete. How do I do that? They handed me a big book, got a sponsor, and little by slowly, chop wood, carry water. One day you look around and say, I'm not the greatest. I'm not the worst. I'm really okay where I am. My perceptions and conception about this power have shifted, an internal shift in consciousness, no longer living along the lines of human order where I need more to be good, but divine order, where I respect you, you respect me, unconditional love for you, unconditional love for me. In fact, even if you don't like me, even if you slander me, even if you throw me on the bus, I will still build a bridge for you to walk over. I will carry you over the bridge like my Heavenly Father does for me and for you. That's being an agent for God. That's what we do in AA. We don't take stock at the door. We just say, welcome, come on in. And we will go to any lengths for another person in AA. I don't know what they do out there. I know what they do in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I like the effect produced by alcohol. And the following Saturday rolled around and I got drunk again. And the following Saturday rolled around and I got drunk again. And then I had this brainstorm. Why do I have to wait till Saturday? Why not start on Friday? I knew nothing about the craving that goes on in my body that separates me from those other folks. Right? I live in South Florida. There's a lot of drinking going on. You know, the bars are open. The restaurants are open. Lunchtime, people are getting fired up. They can drink, go back to the office, sit in the meeting, go home to their wife and children, have even a martini, watch TV, go to bed, get up and do it all over again. I have a martini, lock your doors. The craving for someone like me is intensified, never satisfied, and then I get bookended with this other piece called the mental obsession that never allows me to see truth. My mind never allows me to see truth. It'll lie to me. It is the predator. And my mind says, one more drink, just one more drink. It'll be different. It pretties up a junkyard just to get me back to that which is killing me. And what I found out in Alcoholics Anonymous is that alcoholism will go underground and resurface in other areas, even though we're sitting in a meeting of AA looking really good, looking really spiritual, looking like Moses, looking fantastic, sounding great, but inside we're wreckage again. Because we're on a sex spree, or a food spree, or a money spree, or a fear spree, or perhaps the greatest addiction in the world, the thinking spree, because we're always thinking. I'm thinking. Gotta think. I tell new folks, when you ask an old timer a question, they say, let me think about this, I'll get back to you. Just keep running. Just keep going. Yeah. Thinking, dangerous. And why do I do that? Because I can't be alone in the present moment with me. I can't be here with breath. And when the conversion happens, when the flip happens, where we get right with God, we realize, I have realized, that the breath I take is my Father breathing through me, for me, and for you as well. How could I character assassinate you when you're God's creation? How dare I? Okay. I grew up in Brooklyn, New York, and what you did was took everyone's inventory. Gossip was good. Talk about everyone. If you weren't from this neighborhood, you were wrong. You were a mistake. We are the greatest. I grew up belief systems and women's places in the home. Be a real man. Never cry. Fight first. Worry about it later. You can see why I was running into problems by the time I was 16, because I was so unlike that. But how else do you live? Drinking made it all right. Drinking made it great. The problem is I couldn't start once I stopped. I had even no idea when I was going to start. Powerless over alcohol. Step one tells me as a real alcoholic, I'm drinking. Not that I can't drink. I'm going to drink. Someday, somehow, some way, I will pick up a drink, and when I start, I can't stop. And I found out a rude awakening in AA that meetings don't treat my alcoholism. Meeting makers die. Meeting makers get drunk. I almost died, and I got drunk. It's a sacred room. It's a Band-Aid on an open wound. I wouldn't want to be any other place than a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the camaraderie. It's the joy. It's the sacredness of this fellowship. But we have two other sides to our triangle, and that is the big book in the 12 steps and giving it all away in the form of sponsorship. Comes of Age says the basic service we supply in AA is one drunk worker with another. It is sacred. It's what God has given us to go pass on and bring those people home. Right? But at 14, who cared? It was all about me. Self-centered. It was all about me. I mean, my thing was, let's not talk about me. Let's talk about you. What do you think of me? I mean, that's how I operated. Huh? So I start to experience consequences as a direct result of my drinking. I have two younger brothers at home. They idolized me. They followed me around. I got them into the stickball games. We used to play stickball back then. And the softball games. They listened to the same music I did. They dressed like me. They idolized. I was their older brother, so I protected them. I got them involved. That's what we learned in my family. You protect each other. But alcoholism does what alcoholism does, and it starts to rip apart the fabric of a family. There's a family afterwards says, years of living with an alcoholic will make any child or wife neurotic. The whole family has become ill. My family was suffering from full-blown alcoholism, and none of them are alcoholics. My brothers became afraid of me. And my dad, who always walked head up and shoulders squared, became embarrassed to call me his son. And so what I started doing was stealing from my family because I was such a coward. I would steal from my brother's piggy banks. I would steal from my dad's dresser drawer. And one morning I woke up and there was no money to steal. And I didn't know what to do. And you know when you're in a panic and the obsession's on, you know you need to drink. And what do I do now? So what do? You steal from people. And I discovered my dad's checkbook one morning. And I'll never forget this. I knew nothing about checking statements. I knew nothing. All I knew is you put your name on there, put your mouth, and somehow people give you money back. I don't understand. Or you go pay a bill. So I would go down to the local store. They all knew my dad. I say, my dad gave me this check. He says, be okay, you didn't have cash on. Can you cash it for me? Absolutely, anything for Vic, son. And they give me $20. I thought I hit Powerball. This was a great thing. So I did this a whole bunch of times. I was stealing checks, going to the local store, giving me money. I'd go to the back, get some beer, and walk out the door. I knew nothing about checking statements. All these things came back in the mail to my dad. And then he came looking for me. And he was annoyed with me. This is not the type of man you want looking for you. You think Robert De Niro in Goodfellas was a tough character. You have no idea. And I was sitting in a car on the Lower East Side of Manhattan. I was sitting next to this young lady. We got drunk the night before, so I thought I was in love. My dad drove up, had a cigarette, threw it down. This eyebrow goes up, and he called me, actually screamed my name, and I start to drive away. I stopped the car, and I says, honey, you talk to him. I got to get out of here. And I ran away, which made no sense at all, but that's what I do. And then he caught me and went to my first treatment center. I spent 28 days in treatment. That was the thing back then. You go into treatment, they talk about a lot of things, your dysfunctional family, your triggers and enablers, your issues. I hated my family more on the way out of treatment than on the way in. And they would take us for art therapy and dance therapy and creative writing and all these wonderful things. And one day they took us to a gym, a fitness center. And there was a basketball court on rim on one side and a basketball rim on the other. And they gave us one basketball. It's physical therapy. One basketball, we had crackheads, dope fiends, drunks, pill heads. They says, go play. We're all detoxing. And the basketball, true story, the basketball rolled from one end of the gym to the other, and we just watched it. And it went like this. I'm not getting it. You get it. Right? The crackheads were great. They went, I'll get the ball. Don't worry about it. I'll get it. Is that an omen? The whole thing just fell? The potheads went, wow, man. So we went outside and smoked a cigarette, and that was it for physical therapy. And then I was discharged. And he said, good luck. Go to AA. And what I did was I had that girl who was sitting in the car meet me at the door with the pint. We cracked the seal. I inquired about an AA meeting, and I drank because the obsession never left. I needed to drink. I'm going out there. I need to drink. I need to get that coating. I need to get that buffer. I need to get that social lubricant just to get out there because I'm going out there. I can't go out there raw. I can't do life on life's terms. So I drank, and the craving was right on me. The allergy was on me. I couldn't stop drinking. And I went right back into the same vicious cycle, and I made my second treatment center. Then I made my third treatment center. I got a job as a dock worker, a longshoreman, working on the South Brooklyn docks, not the training ground for spiritual growth. This is rough territory. Guys were fed up with the day at sunrise in this place. And everyone drank for the cold weather, cold beer for the hot weather. And there was a lot of illegal activities, and I fell right into it. And little by slowly, they started to stay away from me because they can control and regulate the amount they took. I couldn't. I stopped drinking. All bets are off. And I start borrowing money from people associated with that environment that I shouldn't be borrowing money from. These are some rough characters. I got into some non-conference approved dry goods at some point. and I got into serious trouble. And I made my third, fourth, and fifth treatment center, and interesting things started to happen for me around my fifth treatment center. I knew I was alcoholic. I had been to treatment. I had gone to some AA meetings. They talked about step one, and I had conceded to my innermost self that I was a real alcoholic. I knew what it was, and I realized how much like I was mom, just like my mom. Shortly before I went to my fifth treatment center, I took up residence with this young lady in a flea bag motel with a bar on the bottom. And she was a barmaid. Till this day, I don't know why, other than God put her in my path, why she was even spending time with me. But she would finish her shift and come up and crash out, and I'd be drunk and passed out. And I didn't get out of bed. I just lay there. One early morning, she finished her shift, and she crashed out, and I went into her pocketbook because I knew she had a lot of money from that night, and I was going to take the money and run, which is what I usually did. I was a thief. And when I went into her pocketbook, I discovered a bunch of Valium in this bottle. Now, you know how we are. There's no script on it, just a bottle with pills in it. And I says, "Thank you, God. You do exist." And I ate all the pills. And I washed them down with blackberry brandy, and I got back into bed, and I'll never forget this moment as long as I live. I wasn't animated, but I call it a quiet excitement within me. It was relief. I knew that when these things do what they do, I'm not going to wake up. I'm going to go to sleep, and this thing, this nightmare, this thing called life is finally over. I'm done. I'm out. It's been a mistake since the beginning. It's been a horrific ride. I want out, and this is a good way to go. Nice and easy. Now, I'm in my mid-20s when I'm attempting to do this, but it seemed like the solution. In this moment, I remember thinking I had this flash of my mom who went out the same way. And I realized, because we brought up with, mom committed suicide because she's a woman. Women are weak. Men are strong. That's what we were told. Men don't do this. The Marinelli men don't do this. I thought suicide was a gender issue. And in that moment, laying in bed, when I was starting to nod out, I realized at that moment, this has nothing to do with gender. This has everything to do with being alcoholic. I'm just like that. The apple don't fall from the tree. I'm alcoholic. This is what we do. I want a way out. Suicide, why not? It's better than torture this way. And God interrupted my death. There is no way on God's green earth I should be giving this talk this morning. But here I am, because God had some other plans for me. And I came to again, cursing God for making me come to, cursing my life for what it turned into, feeling completely hopeless. Where do I go? Young lady spoke yesterday about getting out of jail at 4 o'clock in the morning. And who do you call? Where do you go? I swallowed hard because I lived that life. No one even wants to hear from me, let alone make a call to someone. No money, unemployed. I need a drink. Where do I go? Got to hustle money again. Bondage to self. This is what alcoholism loves to do with everyone in this room. Whether it be Park Avenue, park bench, pain is pain. Mine is the worst because I walked it. Yours is the worst because you walked it. And when we get to share, we get to share that kind of stuff. And what we're doing, never to revisit that. And never, ever judging a new person when they come in who has that story that we lived. Never coming from a spiritual hilltop, but getting down with them and say, yeah, I walked in that trench too. Just walk with me. Grab on. Pull out. That's what God did for me. That's what we do for others in AA. The sacred rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I got thrown out of this flea bag motel. Never saw that woman again. I went into my fifth treatment center. My dad showed up in my life. I got put in my fifth treatment center. Now, by now, I know what I am. And yet I walked into a treatment center, even though I conceded to my innermost self with contempt for God. Had contempt for Alcoholics Anonymous because I went there and got drunk. Had contempt and hate for a lot of things, but I knew if I continue to drink, I'm going to die. But there was a little piece of me that says, maybe, perhaps, somehow, some way, I can just sneak a little drinky poo, a little pill, and I'll be okay, just to take the edge off, just to have that. We all got that just-in-case pill, that just-in-case. Like we go in for surgery and they give us pain meds, we take it for a couple of days, and some of us don't flush the whole thing because we put it in the back of the cabinet, just in case. You never know. That's my reservation and a lurking notion. So I spent 9 weeks in treatment. I did push-ups and sit-ups. I put on weight. I talked about my dysfunctional family, my triggers, my issues, my enablers. I was a superstar. 9 weeks in treatment. I looked great on the way out. 2 days later, I was drinking again and couldn't stop. I will tell you, I've been to 7 treatment centers. In 6 treatment centers, I managed on my own power 2 days of sobriety, and that was after my 5th treatment center. I would not turn and surrender to God. I still thought it was a matter of having a powerful desire and self-reliance. I would not turn to this power called God. Now, God knows that. And what God will do for me, and he's done for us in different ways, he took me to the edge of a cliff where my nails were dug in to get my attention. There was nowhere else to turn but back to this power. And what this power did was build another bridge and then carry me across like he's done for many of us. My God is not a fair God. My God's one of all love and all forgiveness. If my God was a fair God, you have a different speaker here tonight. I would have been long gone. A fair God to me is one who walks the walk, has the entrance into the pearly gates. You've done good. A guy like me, there's no shot. There is no chance. But there is one for people like us. There is one for someone like me. My God went to the cross for this. Forgiving, all love, whatever you did, let's push it aside. Open up your arms. I'll carry you into Alcoholics Anonymous, and they got the power to put you back together. That's what's happened. That's been my story. Huh? I spent a day and a half in my 6th treatment center, and by now I'm unemployed. I lost contact with my family, and I was panhandling in lower Manhattan. Got into the 6th treatment center, spent a day and a half in there, and I signed out AMA. I signed out of 2 treatment centers, had drugs brought into one. I was not a poster child for willingness to go to any lengths, but God knew. Took me to the edge of a cliff, June 23rd, 1988. Trap doors have trap doors, I found out. God had to let me truly experience the lack of power, choice, control that step one talks about firsthand. Experiential, I can tell you about that. The same way experientially I can talk to you about what it's like living in the world of the spirit. Anything less than me talking about that would be just falsely humble. But it's what God's done for me and for us. And so I panhandle, and I remember being outside the Port Authority in Midtown Manhattan. And as Bill says in his story, the courage to do battle was not there. I was done. I couldn't do it. And outside the Port Authority, I had this moment. God will interrupt our drunk. Blind drunk, God will get us instantly sober. At the edge of the cliff, God will interrupt our death. And it happened to me. He will beat a flimsy reed, keep feeding us, keep seeking us over and over and over again until we get it. And I was outside the Port Authority, and I had this moment of clarity, and I saw my family and my life kind of pass in front of me. And what I did in that moment was curse God again. God got it from me. Every 4-letter expletive I can offer, he got. But my God's not a fair God. He's all love. No opposite, all forgiving, no opposite. And I went about my business. I don't know what happened to me. And I kept drinking and kept getting worse. I had been locked up many times now. And my life was this humiliation and degradation. I didn't know what I was doing. I thought God had it in for me. Where do I turn? I went to AA. I got drunk. I went to my religious community. That didn't work. I've been to psychiatrists. That didn't work. I've been in 6 treatment centers. They don't work. Where do I turn? Where do I go? It's always darkest before the dawn. I had to be completely out of options. No reservation, lurking notion. And my Heavenly Father, with his hand, orchestrated the whole thing to get my attention. Because one thing about this path that I have found out, and I speak for myself, I need to be all in. I need to be a journeyman. I have to practice fidelity to my God. I can't worship other things. I can't have idolatry. I can't worship anything or anyone before my God, because I will lose it anyway, and I will lose my sobriety. I have to practice daily fidelity to my God. All in. And fidelity to my Alcoholics Anonymous. We serve God in AA in my house, and that allows us to have a life. But it's none of my business. My life is none of my business. The life I've been given by AA, the life I've been given by God, I don't have a life. It belongs to God in AA. A life of invitation. I serve. My whole life is one of service, guys. Privately and professionally, I serve. And somehow, in service, we go home full. Somehow, following God's path and serving God, I don't need a banquet prepared for me to be full, to be happy, to be joyous. Can I be grateful when there's no food on the table? Can I be grateful when there's no money in my pocket? I've experienced both, and I was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous and still felt a sense of gratitude in my heart because I'm above ground, sucking air and sober, and I get to come to Alcoholics Anonymous, and somehow God's going to move me out of this mess again. I don't need stuff. It's nice. I don't need it to be grateful. Because I walk. We get to walk hand in hand, our book says, with this power called God in the sacred rooms of AA. Huh? June 23rd, 1988 showed up, and I was in this hallway, which is where I used to like to live. Abandoned buildings, hallways. It wasn't too dangerous. Creepy as all hell. Things crawling around in the middle of the night. But who cared? No one was going to bother me. I was due to get arrested, and I was due to get hurt in the characters that I was surrounding myself with. And walking with this impending doom until I had a pint, went in the back of a hallway, and just passed out. And this one particular day, when I woke up, I wasn't planning to stop drinking June 23rd, 1988. I wanted to die. I got to get this over with. I can't do this anymore. And God got me to the edge of a cliff, and this moment showed up that brought me here tonight. The spiritual experience we talk about in the big book, the spiritual awakening, the transformation, the revolution, whatever word works for you, it's pointing towards the same thing, oneness with God where we're made new. It'll happen for every one of us. It's a guarantee when we sit with the sponsor, start going through the 12 steps in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. God will deliver himself to us. He will reveal himself. By the time we get to step 10, we've entered the world of the Spirit. Here's God, here's you, on with our life. Go serve others. I have found out the catalyst for that, where the switch flips, was in the worst moment of my life, which was June 23rd, 1988, where I experienced that incomprehensible demoralization. There was nowhere else to turn. That was the beginning of my spiritual transformation. And then God provided teachers with the big book. It's happened to me in AA. I've hit a couple of walls in AA. Unemployment, divorce, no money. Oh my God, what am I going to do? I'm sober. This shouldn't be happening to me. I didn't know what to do. Back on my knees. Father, what do I do? And in those moments when we turn to God, it sometimes becomes the most intimate moments with this power. There's nothing blocking us. Back to fidelity with God. I begged June 23rd, 1988, the words, "I don't want to die. Take me from this." I was not thinking about Alcoholics Anonymous. Or speaking, or going into treatment. That wasn't even in my thought. It was, "I don't want to die. Take me from this." And as I said earlier, the words, "Enough, I have other work for you to do." I got this thought, this intuitive thought, call Dad. The only guy on the planet who was going to come get me in my physical, emotional, and spiritual bankruptcy was my old man, who I hadn't seen in a long time. And if it wasn't for the courage, strength, and direction that God gave him, again, you have a different speaker here this morning. Alcoholism ripped my family apart. And somehow, with the touch of the master's hand, players come back. The guardian angels come back. And they put differences aside to save us. It's God's work. It's God's work in AA. It's happened to us, and we go do it for others, sometimes strangers. The 12-step call. We will love that drunk unconditionally. We don't even know who they are. We will clean them up and put them back to work, put them back to hell. It's what God does. It's the healing. What we get to do in AA is heal. We heal others. That'll ruffle some feathers in contemporary AA. With God's power, we get to heal a drunk. That's how I'm here. Drunks worked on me. And we work with others. And we go back to those families that were ripped apart because of alcoholism. And we get an awake drunk, a spiritual transformation, and go back in there and see that family again, the family starts to heal. So I stopped making collect calls to my dad. I had no money. And I would go to the phone, and I would have these crying jags. I remember, if I live to be 100, I'll never be as old as the day I walked into AA. I remember walking like hunched over. I had these construction boots with holes in them. I had these blood-stained, soiled clothes. And it was up in New York, and it was June. I had a turtleneck and a jacket, and I was cold and sweating at the same time. I don't know if you can identify with this, where you can't get drunk and you can't get sober anymore. You're just drinking to exist. What do I do? My dad was in a town called Atlantic City. He was spending a weekend with his wife, just doing a few days down there, gambling and a show and just having some fun. We had lost contact with each other for quite some time. And my dad told me this story at my first AA birthday. I was actually the next day at work because we were working again together. He says, that day, he says, I was in Atlantic City with his wife, and he says, I had a feeling in what he called his gut that I was in trouble. And the voice said, go get Peter. And he left Atlantic City and trekked his way back to Brooklyn and New York and to the spots he knew he might find me. Here's the guys to go through the worst neighborhoods with my uncle with the photograph of me and pay off the winos and the junkies and the dealers. Say, here's $20. This is my son. Where is he? And he came looking for me. And as God would connect the dots like God does, found me. And I was completely broken. And my dad got out of the car and just gently called my name like any parent who's lost their son or daughter. And he walked across the street and there was a gentle spirit and somehow was able to sense this. This was God orchestrating the whole thing. I told my dad, I'm okay. Don't worry, I'm fine. I wasn't fine. And I remember, I collapsed. I kind of just collapsed. And he grabbed me and held me up. And I remember my dad holding me up. And I must tell you, this is as close as we had been since probably I was sitting on his lap as a little boy. And I immediately sensed that, oh my God, my dad's holding on to me. As much as I didn't like his lifestyle, as much as he intimidated me, Dad's daddy was Mickey Mantle to me. Please just hold on to me. Please, Dad, just tell me I'm okay, that I'm not a mistake. Tell me somehow you're proud of me. And it was in this moment, the scrap heap of both our lives, that our roots began to grasp new soil. In this moment, everything was removed. His ideas about how life should be, his ideas about how my life should be, everything was completely removed. We were stripped down to the raw, and he held on to me. And I remember him saying this, and my dad's not a prayer. My dad's not a God guy. He kept looking up and saying, I'm not going to lose my son to this. I'm not going to lose my son. He kept saying like a mantra, patting me on the back. And I didn't want that moment to end for the rest of my life. It was the first time I can remember that I felt safe and secure, wrapped in my pop's arms. Just for a split second, there was a beginning. It was the beginning of a new life, and neither one of us knew it. God knew it. He sends out the messengers. And I was placed in my seventh treatment center, my last treatment center. Now, the mind, this alcoholic mind, was not done because I spent 10 days in one treatment center, and they sent me out to Minnesota. And bless the hearts of those folks in AA out there. There was a meeting called the Three Legacies meeting. They did for me what I couldn't do for myself. But I was in treatment for 10 days and about a day and a half layover to go out to Minnesota. And I remember thinking, I want a drink. I need one more drink before I go to this other trip. I need a drink. I need a drink of Mr. Boston Blackberry Brandy. They discharged me into my father's company, and we drove home from Amityville, Long Island, to Staten Island, New York. This is a long drive, and my mind is telling me this. As soon as he pulls over to get gas, if we stop for something to eat, if there's traffic, run. Get out of the car and run. Just run. And I'm plotting my getaway. We drove up to the house in Staten Island. This is the last shot. You can get out of here. And I'm about to leave, open up the door and run, and I followed my dad into the house. The next day and a half, I had the shakes. I was uncomfortable. I couldn't sleep. And my dad says, are you okay? And in the past, I would have said, sure. I said, Dad, I'm not okay. I want a drink. And what God does, God does. And my dad says, I'll make a dish of pasta. Fix everything. We went out on the back porch. Now, my dad's not a God guy. He doesn't know about AA. But he did his best at a father and son talk and talked to me for the first time. And I was telling him how afraid I was and how I felt like I was a failure to him. And I told him, I want a drink. I don't know what else to do. And my dad didn't judge me, but he just played dad. I called the treatment center that day, which was very much unlike me, but very much like God. And I called them up and I said, I want a drink. I want to get out of here. And they talked me down off the ledge. They worked in treatment. They were AA members. And I didn't sleep that night. And the next morning was difficult. But the next thing I know, I'm on the plane. I'm going out to Minnesota. And something flipped again. Because my dad and my brother took me to the airport. And it was pre-9/11. The families can go pretty far with you. And I remember walking onto that little gangway. And I turned back. And I watched my dad basically crumbling in front of me. And my youngest brother was crying. And he says, please get better. And I got in the seat. And I says, if you're out there, I will do anything. That search for God, that willingness to go to any lens, I thank my Heavenly Father. I still seek it, and I'm still willing to go to any lens to get right. I like the effect produced by God. I like the effect produced by AA. I love having purpose in my life. I love knowing what this journey is entailing. Paradise while I walk this walk. In Alcoholics Anonymous, having a useful life, one of direction. My GPS is back. The center is back, and I'm not a seeker of belief or faith. I know one of the greatest gifts we get to experience is knowing that we're known by our Creator in Alcoholics Anonymous, knowing we walk hand in hand with this power, and all we have to do is go work with a drunk. There is no doubt. There is no skepticism. We just know at a gut level we walk with God in AA. Huh? <clears throat> 11 months later, I was invited home. Lived in Minnesota for almost 11 months. My life became one of invitation. They invited me home. Do you want to come home? I said, it's okay with you. I got a sponsor, a group called the Free Spirit Group. This sponsor was a bulldog. He didn't care about feelings. He was a good old timer. One line answers for everything. You know, it hurts when I do that, then don't do it. Next, you know. Right? Yeah. Now we need process groups. Let's talk about your feelings. Let's read page 449, acceptance, and find out why you keep doing this stuff. It was like that. We went through the book. And one of the things I've got to experience after a bunch of years of being in AA is I'm someone who keeps going through the steps, 1 through 9 into 10, 11, and 12. Death to self is successful living. Serving God. No longer wavering, not double-minded, walking through a very narrow gate on a very narrow road. And in that discipline, there's a tremendous amount of freedom I have found in Alcoholics Anonymous and carrying this message. It works when all activities fail. Work with others. Go work with a drunk. Go work with a drunk. Because we can transmit something that we do have, and that's an awakened spirit, or perhaps what we don't have, and that's not an awakened spirit. It's a great, great responsibility God has given every one of us. Yeah. So, I start going to my religious community, early sobriety, and the idea was to go and light a candle for the sick and suffering in and out of the rooms, and a candle for my mom, because this was a mystery, this was a riddle. Why? Where'd she go? I wasn't too sure about this place called heaven. I didn't know anything. How do I reconcile this? And God delivered this to me in a meditation. The power of meditation, the power of going into silence. Our 11th step talks about it. Do I have a life of meditation and prayer and inventory? The 11th step talks about it. And they wrote this when they were not that long into sobriety, but just a couple of paragraphs, and we can get enlightened. They tell us make use of other inspirational books. Be quick to see where religious people are right. Make use of what they offer. So I go into meditation. Is that my phone? Is that my bartender? Okay. I'm a little busy right now. I'm sitting in meditation, and this thing happened that changed my life forever. When I was drinking, I remember I used to be in, not a blackout, but kind of right in the middle of a blind drunk and cursing God and telling God, if you make my mom come down from wherever you got her, just let her hold on to me one time. You ripped me off. You took her away from me. I didn't even say goodbye. Just give me one hug with my mom. Just give me one hug and I will stop drinking. You do that for me, I'll quit drinking. I'm bargaining with God. I was in serious trouble. I'm bargaining with God. But no prayers go unanswered. And God hears the heart and knows the soul when it's broken, when it's hurting and needs something. But in his time, and the ground's got to be fertile for things to grow. I plow the field, God does the growing. And so I started praying and lighting these candles. And in this meditation, I found myself on a beach. I love the water. I love being by the beach. I watch the ocean, God showing off. I feel safe by that. And so God knew that and took me to a beach. I'm sitting in meditation, and what comes out of the horizon is my conception of God. And as he walks closer to me, literally out of his chest appears my mom. I realize that's oneness with God. He was displaying this to me. And they both walk over to me, and I turn into this little 8-year-old boy in this meditation. Now, guys, you know when you're 8, 9, and 10, mom is mom. You get a hug from mom at 8 years old. The world's a great place to be. I mean, it's just the way it is. Between ages 8 and 10, I was being... There was an older relative, distant relative, very inappropriate with me, so it was a nasty time for me. Couldn't tell anyone about that. And my mom knelt down to me, who was 8, and gave me that hug. Remember holding on to me in this meditation. And I stood up and I became an adult, and my mom held on to me as a man. And I remember there were tears coming down her eyes. She was weeping, but they weren't tears of sorrow. They were tears of joy. There are no words spoken in this meditation, but that's how it goes in meditation. There was no mind interpreting. It was present. It was an experience. God was delivering what he promised. And what my mom did in this moment was point off to the horizon where all these lights were lit. Hundreds of lights lit up, and then she pointed off to the other side, and there were these hundreds of lights lit up, these flickering lights. And my higher power, my God, put his arm around me, eyeball to eyeball. I never experienced so much peace, so much contentment, so much safety as I did in that moment. And without saying a word to me in the meditation, she said, she's okay, she's with me. And I believed it. There was no leap of faith. I don't believe in a leap of faith. My God shows me there's no need to have a leap of faith. My God inspires me to go. My God's at the starting point, the end point, in the middle. Just carry me. There is no gravity in God's world. I just need to surrender. My mom held on to me one more time. Her and my higher power walked away, became one. I came out of meditation. And I was weeping. I don't know how long I was in meditation. If it was for 2 minutes or however long it was, 20 minutes, I don't know. But when you're in that kind of place and we get there, there is no such thing as time. There's no calendar. It just is. Like when we live in the circle around the triangle, when we're living all two sides of the triangle and we're current, there is no before, no later on, no beginning, no end. It just is. And I called my sponsor and I told him the experience I had. And he was awake, upstanding member of AA, who had a life of prayer and meditation, who was a step worker, and said to me this. He says, haven't you been lighting candles for your mom for about 9 years now? Because I was 9 years into sobriety when this happened. I says, yes. He says, God let you know she got them. My God knows me. There is something after here. Language of the heart. The heart speaks louder than any microphone when it comes to God. And God will respond in kind when the ground is fertile. At that moment, my whole life was changed forever. I was made new from the inside out because I knew my God knew me. Knowing that I am known by my Creator. It happened in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm a full down drunk. I'm a bum. I turn into an animal when I'm drinking. Not worse than anyone, not better than anyone. I just turn into the guy who gets drunk and you pull him out of a dumpster tomorrow morning. That's what I do. I live on the streets. And God took that and raised it to where it is this morning. The life that was perishable becomes imperishable. The life that had dishonor has one of glory. The life that has no power gets power. This body that walked around dead becomes awake. It's what happens to us in the sacred rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Let me bear witness for a newcomer that that's what happens in here. That's my job. I get to travel with Marion. Sober a long time. We get to pray together. Her sponsor's one of my heroes. I didn't even know it. I got to meet Polly P one time. Yeah. And here I am, tough guy from Brooklyn. I meet Polly P for the first time, and I start crying right in front of her. You don't know what you've done for me, you know. Alcoholics Anonymous, right? Do this for fun and for free. I'm blessed beyond what I deserve, but I'm glad my Heavenly Father keeps putting one foot in front of the other so I can meet you on this journey in different places, in different conferences, and sometimes at an old AA meeting with a lousy cup of coffee. That's all I got. Peace.
We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in other speaker tapes or CDs from AA or Al-Anon, please contact us at Sound Solutions, toll free 1-877-893-2777, or visit us on the web at soundsolutionsrecording.com. We are also available to cover your recording and sound system needs. Thank you for allowing us to be of service and carrying the message.